So first of all, Dave, just thanks for taking the time to chat to us this week. I appreciate it.
No problem, Mark. Glad to be on.
So obviously, InvestWise has published a paper on retirement and pension planning as well. I understand one of the key findings of that involved the concept of spendophobia among some retired clients of yours. Can you maybe explain what that means, first of all?
Yeah, so it's an interesting phenomenon that we've experienced with our retirees, and it's probably an alien concept for your younger listeners, but we find it's very common that our clients are, say, 60 years plus, who've worked for 40 years to build up a nest egg and pay down their mortgage and save a few quid in their pension or in savings. When they hit 60 and retire, it's an extremely difficult switch to make, to move from that kind of accumulation savings habit of a lifetime to going and spending the money. Now, it's partly that they have never done it. They've always had this ingrained instinct to save and be frugal and prudent, which is, makes perfect sense, of course. But it's also a phenomenon I've seen, especially with the way housing and the cost of living increases have affected the younger generations over the past 10 years, that they suddenly fear for the next generation's ability to buy a house or pay for a wedding or, you know, put the kids through childcare and education. So they suddenly shift their mindset from saving for themselves to saving for their kids, even though they may be adult kids at that stage.
I suppose as well, Dave, there's kind of almost you're waiting for the rainy day to come as well, that kind of state of mind as well.
Yes, and that is a valid fear of long-term care costs as well. So I guess what we see is those three influencing factors. People tend to err on the side of caution and don't spend at all. So they don't necessarily, it's a very difficult calculation to work out how much is enough money to get you through long-term care and provide for you in retirement. But also, how much you can spend and still be secure. It's a difficult calculation to make. Sometimes it needs a bit of help from outside to put those numbers together. So people just instinctively will continue the habit of a lifetime and just continue to save and not give themselves permission to go and spend.
I suppose, would there be an aspect as well of the presumed drop in inflation that eventually it will, level back out at around the desired 2% or so, that maybe if they wait a bit longer, they'll get better value for the money they've saved?
Yeah, like that is a part of it. But inflation is already close to that. I think we're not far below, we're just below 3%, I believe, now for 2024. So inflation is under control, but people, you're right, still have that mindset that we still have high inflation because we didn't have any for so long. But in a way, I try and encourage my retirees not to worry too much about markets and economics and inflation and think a little bit about one of the questions I always ask people at this stage when we're having this kind of conversation and trying to work out, what's a safe spending rate so that they're okay and they can achieve their security goals, is to go tell them to go back to when they were 25 and say, when you were 25, what was it that, what were your dreams? What did you think you'd be doing in retirement? Was it traveling to India? Was it buying a boat? Was it going back to college and studying some topic that you just weren't interested in during your career? Or was it continuing to save up money for kids or for long-term care? I try and reignite that imagination at that stage when people have typically forgotten about what those initial dreams and goals were. Sometimes that can trigger a little bit. And then we work out, okay, you want to go to India or you want to travel Asia and it's going to cost you 10 grand or 15 grand or 20. And then we work out, okay, I think you can well afford to do that. That's well within the scope of your plan. Let's go and do it. And do it when you're young. Don't wait until you're 75 or 80 to do it.
And that's interesting as well, Dave, because I suppose what clients may be looking for is for you to tell them what the right thing to do is, or probably what the wrong thing to do is as well, just to avoid it. But in reality, yeah, you're flipping it back on them to say, what is it that you want to do? I suppose it's interesting that they're bringing back this individual aspect or individualistic aspect to it. It's up to each person what they want to do with it.
Oh, absolutely, and we find it very. That's a really difficult question because I had a conversation with someone yesterday, and they said we just don't want to spend it if we just want to keep it. And I said that's absolutely fine. It's your money, but I find my job is to ask the open questions and you know have the conversation in a safe space, and then try and work out what's prudent, what makes sense. A big struggle with a lot of this is that people get very risk averse at that age and leave their money in cash in the bank. Which does make all these things much more difficult than if they're invested in something where it can grow and it gives them more capacity to protect for long-term care. And that's where the inflation question really comes in. Inflation will really destroy your potential for spending in retirement if you're just sitting in cash a lot of the time. So it's all part of the jigsaw that has to be put together to work out what makes sense. And this is what our report was trying to cover, really, was what are the moving pieces in this jigsaw puzzle, and how do you pull them together and to get a safe answer that gives people peace of mind, but also maybe gives them permission to dream a little.
And do you find that people are more willing to spend it, or at least, I suppose, move it on a bit if they have invested in assets, or their money is invested in something rather than being sat in the bank? That people are maybe more cautious if it's in the bank.
Yeah, for sure. A simple example will be the last 5 years where, asset values have gone up significantly and people have seen some lucky people have seen their wealth grow, and they're very happy to spend the growth, and they say, well, that's kind of free money that I really didn't anticipate having. Let's blow that on upgrading our flight to see our son in Australia. That's a kind of a typical one I get a lot. We wouldn't have gone to Australia if we couldn't upgrade the flight because we're that bit older. You know, those kind of things are the key decisions that people will deprive themselves of. Sometimes it just takes someone like us to say, no, you're fine, you can absolutely do that, it won't be a problem.
Yeah.
Or it won't be. You need to be careful, and this is what you need to do, in relation to, say, the Fair Deal scheme, if people are a little bit tighter in terms of their finances and how that all works. It's just as important on both sides. Because at the end of the day, we're talking about a lucky few here, really. The average retirement fund is 110,000, so an awful lot of the population will be retiring on just above the state pension. So they won't necessarily, they'll need to really understand their cash flow every month and be careful. But there are plenty of other people out there who have that little bit more and worry about whether they can spend it or not.
Yeah. And depending, Dave, on how much of a giveaway budget we have this year as well, we may well see cuts to inheritance tax. It's been kind of floated by government TDs, I think, to kind of sound it out a bit. Will that influence people's decisions as to whether or not they sit on their retirement kitty or not?
Yeah, firstly, in my own opinion, I can't see them reducing the threshold because it would bring a lot of family homes into the equation and might even force families to sell the family home to pay the tax because there would be no other asset of any consequence. So 335 is only just barely above the average national house price, depending on what part of the country you're in, I guess.
Yeah.
So I really can't see them. But if they do threaten to reduce the threshold, I can see a very, very fast transfer of assets from, people who are lucky enough to have a bit of money. I think there'll be an acceleration of gifting down to the next generation to take advantage of the threshold now. But yeah. I think it would be very unfair. And Sinn Féin, in their last manifesto for the last election, actually were talking about increasing the threshold for family homes. So I think actually, in reality, that might be more likely to happen than a reduction. But who knows? They have to balance the books. And if they're going to have a bit of a giveaway in other areas, this may be one way to claw it back.
Yeah.
But watch this space.
And what are some of the other main findings from the paper that InvestWise have published then, if you move away from spendophobia?
Yeah, I think probably the key finding that we see, and this is in some way led by the insurance industry being quite cautious and scared about giving advice, is that we see people, you can see it at the moment with the amount of cash on deposit in Ireland, 150 plus billion, people are extremely risk averse and leave too much money in cash, not growing for them in whatever way they're comfortable with. And actually the insurance industry in general promotes that by just doing simple risk questionnaires, which are, wildly inaccurate. And then someone comes out of this risk questionnaire saying that they are a low-risk investor, so they leave them in a low-risk fund or leave them in the bank in cash. Mm. When in fact, financial plan absolutely needs them to be invested and they have capacity to take some risk to grow their assets and achieve their goals. But unfortunately, the banks and the insurance companies, you know, don't ask that second question. They very rarely say to people, I know you're risk averse, but you really do need to be invested a bit more aggressively than this. They will just tick the box and answer the question. So I see a lot of people not taking enough risk in their pensions, both pre-retirement and post-retirement.
And that's, I suppose, the key as well of getting advice that's, you know, I suppose, again, personalised, individualised to you as to what your situation allows, depending on, I suppose, what age you are, what kind of income you can put away.
Yeah, I think it's very important, whoever's giving you your advice, that they actually ask these open questions about what is it you want? And, you know, try and get behind the reason for any fear that might be there and try and really understand your unique individual situation. If it's just a case of you filling in some forms and a risk questionnaire, people probably haven't spent the time to understand your circumstance, what you want out of life. You know, do you want that trip away and how do we achieve that? Maybe some of your money does need to be invested for 10 years to achieve that goal, and then we can put some money in the bank to secure a gift to your son or daughter. You know, it should never be a one-size-fits-all answer. It should be a bespoke, comprehensive plan that revolves around your dreams and aspirations and what you need yourself and your family. And that takes time, you know, and that's why a lot of the banks will avoid it, of course, but it's the right way to do it.
And we may see, well, we will see an auto-enrolment pension scheme come into play January next year as well. Yeah. The contract's been awarded for that already. Was there any opposition, Dave, I'm interested to know, to this scheme from the private pension sector?
No, funnily enough, very little from the private pension sector, because I think the auto-enrolment scheme isn't particularly generous for anyone on the top rate of tax. I think it would probably drive more people to set up their own personal pensions or company pensions that are private ahead of auto-enrolment, because effectively the auto-enrolment scheme, which is a brilliant scheme and it's badly needed, it does only give 20% tax relief effectively. So if you're a 40% tax rate payer, you'll only be getting 20% on your pension contribution, so you'd be much better off setting up your own. So the pensions industry are aggressively pushing that at the moment to say, get ahead of this and set up your own pension if you're a top rate taxpayer. But I think the scheme in general is fantastic for increasing pension coverage and making people more aware of saving in general.
Yeah, I was going to say, I suppose it would just spark the conversation at least. It's something that no longer ignore and just pretend it isn't there.
Correct.
Really.
Correct. Yeah. Now, I hope it does come in January. I'm doubtful because there's a lot of people to be signed up, potentially 700,000 people in a few months. Mm-hmm. And the pension industry are struggling at the moment to get individuals set up with pensions. There's a structural problem. So I really hope it's Tata Consultancy have been awarded the contract to get it set up, and I hope they can manage it.
Well, listen, Dave, we'll leave it there, but thanks very much for taking the time to chat with us this week. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Mark. My pleasure. Yeah.